The Forward Thinker Show is available wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, it's Coral, and welcome to The Forward Thinker Show, the podcast where we share the stories and expertise of global leaders in business and technology. Today, we're joined by Cesar Villagarcia, co-founder of InitNational, former program manager at JPMorgan Chase and Microsoft, and now working in American Express. Hello, Cesar. Welcome to the podcast.
That's right. Hey, Coral. It's great to see you again. It's been a little while.
You're like
doing good. It's getting a little warmer here in New York, which is why I'm not wearing a hoodie this time as the last time we spoke. So yeah, it's definitely warming up a little bit, feeling a little more like Miami, even though it's like 50-ish, but you know, not quite there. I think it's almost, you know, I think once we get into like June, July, it'll start to feel like heat a little bit here.
I love that you're all the way in New York, but then you were here in Miami and now we're doing this. So this is so fun.
Yeah.
I love it. Cesar, I always ask this question to every single one of my guests. Where are you from?
Yeah, I was born in Lima, Peru. And then I moved to the US when I was around 10 years old.
I'm really happy to like have you here on this podcast. I think you're like one of the people that you're a person that not only I admire, but a lot of students admire here at FIU,
Thank you.
Is where your alma mater, which I love it.
That's right. Go Panthers. Go Panthers.
But Cesar, I think today is going to be a good episode because I really want to dig down onto like the real story behind you, because not a lot of people know that much about your story. So could you tell us how you got into the world of tech? Start from when you were in Lima, everything from there.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, I grew up in Lima and I recall getting my first computer around the age of 8. It was a Windows 98 PC. So kind of dating myself there a little bit. But I remember being really fascinated by it and, you know, playing around with all the apps that were on the computer. I clearly remember us not having internet at the time at home. So I just had like the stock and office apps that were available on the PC. So I played around with that. And I remember playing with PowerPoint, for example, and using like the slides, kind of to draw shapes and text and had fun with that. But I think what really got me into using the computer like every day more often was playing games. And so there was an internet cafe right by where I lived in Lima, and you would essentially go and kind of pay to use the computer for an hour or so. And I would go there often with a friend of mine who essentially showed me how to like download ROMs onto a floppy disk. And so I was a huge fan of Pokemon at the time. So I ended up downloading Pokemon Red onto it. And then I took it home and put it in my PC. And that's all I played for like days on end. So had a lot of fun with that. Then my family moved to the US, you know, like I said, when I was around 10. And after a year or so, we purchased a new PC. And I was then able to kind of jump back into things. We actually had internet at home through AOL. And so that allowed me to play more games, download music. And it gave me kind of my first taste of coding, if you will, which was essentially using MySpace at the time. And I would jump in and mess with the HTML, CSS, kind of update my profiles. That was a lot of fun doing that. And one thing I also did at the time was starting an online forum for video games. So I was essentially the administrator of a forum, and I would spend days kind of like building the site, adding snippets of code to customize like the forum's look and the graphics we were using and so on. So I spent quite a bit of time doing that during those years. And then in school, which, you know, was high school at the time, because when I moved, it was elementary, then middle, and then I went to high school. I took a graphic design class, and so I got even more exposed to technology by using apps like Adobe Illustrator and Photoshop. And I was always very artistically inclined, and I really loved this mix of design and technology. So as I graduated high school, I thought of pursuing a degree in graphic design, which is what I got to do at Miami-Dade College at the beginning, actually. And so I did that for about 2 years, graduated with a degree in graphic design. But around that time, I had gotten an iPhone and got really curious about like coding and making apps. And that's when I decided to then take a programming class at MDC right after I graduated, and figured out that I just kind of fell in love with it and really enjoyed coding. So, and thinking about transferring to another school, I thought, hey, let me start my computer science degree at FIU. I really loved the challenge and the satisfaction that came from coding and being part of that field. And so it is something that then kind of got me into that space and got me to pursue that degree at FIU. And that's where, you know, I went and graduated, and then I ended up getting my first job as a software engineer at JP Morgan. And that kind of like started my career in tech, if you will.
Wow, that's a great story. It sounds like you were a techie even before the iPhones and the MacBooks and all of
A
that.
little bit,
Like,
yeah.
I'm trying to, like, it's hard for me to conceptualize that there was a time where people did not have phones. You literally had to get, like, what was it, the Pokemon Red to actually play games all day.
Yeah, on a floppy disk, on dial-up, like AOL, like MySpace, LimeWire, like, you know what, that time. So we've come a long way.
I think those you're speaking to you're gonna make a lot of millennials happy today with all
I
those.
definitely am. I definitely
I
am.
love
My
that.
millennial friends.
Yeah, I'm so curious. In your experience at FIU, if you guys don't know the people listening to this podcast, so INIT National, and it started as INIT FIU, is the largest tech. INIT FIU specifically is the largest tech organization on campus, but all and they also host the largest hackathon in South Florida. And I think now it's like the largest in the East Coast, so bigger than
That's
half
right.
MIT. And it's so popular that I feel like when someone said, like, oh, I'm from INIT, it's like Drake's their uncle, right? And like they've grown so much that now they are INIT National and they have a chapter. You guys just opened up a chapter in Miami as well, which is super cool. And I think that we have to go back to the origins of this organization because you were one of the co-founders of INIT, and before INIT, it was like UPE. Tell me about how did you make that happen? Because before it was UPE and then transitioned to it. You say that.
I can definitely
Yeah.
talk about everything. But yeah, I mean, it's quite a long story. Now that I
That's
think about it, it's been
what
about quite a
we're
long story. It's been about 10 years now. Crazy enough,
here for. Jesus
to think about
Christ.
that. It all started back in 2014. So that was, like I said, after I transferred to FIU.
This woman.
And I was just looking for a club to join initially, and the community of people who were also into computer science, because I was just coming into the field. And going in, like, I couldn't really find that at the school. Like, there were a couple of small clubs here and there, but they met like once a month and didn't really do a whole lot. And so that's when I decided to kind of start my own. And I saw a call for eWorld applications for UPE, which is the Honor Society for Computer Science. And I thought, you know what? Like, I think this is my opportunity maybe to kind of, you know, build something. And I had been in multiple honor societies in high school and at MDC before. So usually I was the director of marketing or design. And I thought this time I would maybe kind of get out of my comfort zone and push myself to run for president. And so that's what I did. And then I ended up getting elected after that. And after it, I felt really energized and just wanted to kind of build the best student organization that I could. And we did that, you know, first through our first general body meetings. We had technical workshops, we did fun socials, community events. And through that, I got to meet a lot of students, administrators, and make some really good friends. And yeah, it was an incredible learning experience and really helped me kind of break out of my shell. And after a year, it came time to have an eBoard application process again. And, you know, myself having been in other clubs before and typically doing that for a year, I thought I would just kind of like move on, do something else afterwards. But as the end of the year got closer, I started hearing really heartwarming stories from students. I clearly remember a student coming up to me at the end of a meeting to thank me because, thanks to one of our game development workshops that they attended, they had actually found their passion in tech and had actually changed their major to computer science. And so it was stories like that that kept coming, and it just really felt, it felt really rewarding and inspiring, and it really became, and to be honest, it still is that fuel that keeps me going and makes me want to continue this initiative. And so I ended up running again for president for the following year, and the year after that, and the year after that, till I graduated in 2018. So I was president, I think, for the 4.5-ish years of my undergrad at FIU. And during that time, we were able to build this amazing community we have today and, create some incredible programs and massive events like ShowHawks, like you mentioned, work with multiple big name sponsors, and above all, just helping thousands of students to essentially, get into tech who are maybe in the dark about it. I think nothing makes me happier than to see our members, getting these awesome internships and job opportunities, thanks to all the work that, the team has been doing. And yeah, after I graduated, we, then had other amazing presidents and e-boards come in and continue that great work, even through COVID, to be honest. Like, that really impacted, I think, not just obviously the world, but like in terms of our university and the student organizations, it kind of put a stop to everything. But instead of us just kind of like going along with the flow and stopping our activities as well, we decided to adapt and take all our programming online. So within a matter of 2 weeks, we were already up and running, offering online workshops, doing like the build program online, doing all these different things online. Even ShowHawks, I think we had like 1,500 students in 2021, and that was our largest turnout ever that we had at the time. And so, that all happened during COVID. And then yeah, after post-COVID, our community essentially at FIU transitioned into what is now part of INET as the INET FIU chapter, and now we're working hard on bringing this magic that we built at FIU to other schools and helping more people get into tech essentially.
Well, we have a lot. I now have a lot of questions because you really just showed like the whole story in like a few minutes. But I want to get a little dig at the beginning. You mentioned that before you were president of a club, and then now when you were in UPE, the Honor Society, you decided to be president, right? When I joined you in it, before it was called UPE, it was like big and like very organized, but it's not like what you would see of a typical, college group. So could you tell me what are some problems that you saw beforehand, and what did you do to fix them or make them?
So I mean, coming in even all the way back in 2014 when we first started building UPE, essentially coming in, I wanted to kind of get out of my comfort zone, like I said, and try to really build a strong student organization and filling the gaps that were there in the community. So one of those key things was just really learning about what the students needed on campus. So whether it was needing to learn new skills that were not learning in class, building projects that maybe they did not have for their resume, connecting with, community sponsors that maybe they were not able to meet before and potentially get a job. And so all of these things were essentially needs that we captured, I think, during the years that helped us create a strong organization and kind of, build the core of our community. So we did that, through the years of kind of like building UPE and whatnot, that other student organizations maybe were not like doing. And I think that was what really made us special, that we really worked as a almost like a startup. We really took this seriously as a mission that we had to build these awesome programs and make an efficient operation out of it.
I'm sensing a lot of startup-y vibes. Like I'm already hearing that you did user discovery even before you were in like project management, really understanding
Yeah.
what is it about, what are the students' needs, really understand the problems they are facing, because I could go on about this. Getting an internship in technology, it's its own Roman Empire. I'll be honest with you, like last semester, the fall semester was my craziest semester because it's like junior fall. That's like the most important time as a CS student.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the programs that UPE and INET now had, I wouldn't have been able to have such a strong background to get like the internship I'm getting now. I want to ask you, so those you listened to the students' problems because they weren't getting enough, value from their classrooms. Could you explain the different programs that are within INET? Really just understand, like, if someone's not from Miami or from FIU, what are the different programs that INET has within the org?
Yeah, definitely. So there's multiple programs that we have built over the years, and these programs didn't really start as programs. It was more of like a we did a multiple different kinds of events the first few years to kind of test the waters and see what students really wanted. And again, going back to your point earlier about like that user research and discovery, like that was a big part of what we did. So, you know, the first year we, through, you know, trial and error, we hosted different events and workshops, and we had conversations with students about what kinds of things they needed. And that's how we went about, you know, hosting these random events and forming then programs afterwards to specifically cater to each one of these needs that are going to help them become successful in getting a job in tech. So currently we have six programs right now, and I can go through them real quick. So the first one is the Init Explore program, which essentially gives students a taste of different technologies and they can pick up new skills. And they do that through different workshops that they offer. So Explore has different tracks like web development, AI ML, game development, and so on. And each one of these tracks usually offers about 3 to 4 workshops that are introductory in nature, and any student can come in and get a taste of what those tracks are like. And hopefully the idea is that by the end of the semester, you can get an idea of like where maybe you want to continue, you know, in terms of a career path with that program. The other program is the In and Build program, which essentially allows students to come together and build projects, like passion projects that they want to, you know, create. And the whole goal behind that is for them to get like almost like a work-like experience of, you know, building a technical project in the team, working in an agile environment, and being able to essentially have something to add to the resume, which is really important. That's one of those things that we've heard and we've also learned over the years that, you know, a lot of recruiters and companies are looking to see passion projects on resume. So this really helps them with that. The third program is Inner Reach. So in Inner Reach, you essentially go through different workshops and interview prep sessions to help you find your career path, get your LinkedIn and your resume on point, prepare for technical and behavioral interviews, and even do mock interviews with some of our team members. And so the whole idea is to help you get through that interview process and get you set up to get a job in the recruiting season. And there is the Init Uplift program. So the Uplift program is essentially our mentorship program. And what we do here is we pair up students with industry mentors. We have multiple mentors that are part of our professional chapter who work at multiple different companies like Microsoft, Google, Pokemon, EA, JP Morgan, et cetera. And so we pair them up with the students to be able to tell them more about what the industry looks like, what are some things they need to keep in mind as they, you know, get internships and look for full-time opportunities, and really just lend them a hand, you know, because they've been in their shoes before. And so that really helps open up a lot of avenues for students. Then we have the Init Ignite program. So this is a program that we've been running since I think year one or year two. So it's been going on for a while. But through the Ignite program, what we have been doing over the years is essentially, you know, letting the students kind of learn how to teach computing concepts by essentially going to schools and teaching kids how to code. And so we would go to, you know, elementary and middle schools around the area and do lessons on code.org, MIT Scratch, and all those different, you know, elementary coding applications so that they can actually learn some of these computer science concepts. And it's a really rewarding program. It's something that, like, you know, we love doing because it's a great opportunity to be able to connect with the youth and kind of inspire them and motivate them to pursue careers in tech and, you know, continue on that path. And then the last program is Init Hack, which essentially hosts these massive events called hackathons. And the biggest one here that we do host at FIU is ShellHacks, like you mentioned earlier. And that's where essentially kind of everything that we do, like all the programs sort of like come together in one weekend. Because at ShellHacks, you have workshops, you have career development opportunities, there's sponsors you can talk to, you build a project, there's mentors that can help you. And even, you know, potentially those kids can also come and check out the projects and you can meet with. And they get inspired by the work that's happening. So there is just a lot that happens during that one weekend, and it's a tremendous opportunity for any student to really, you know, dive into the world of tech, get acquainted with the community, with the programs, with the opportunities. And yeah, I think a lot of people don't really know this much, but a lot of the companies that you see sponsoring ShellHacks, this is not just sending an email saying, "Hey, we want you at the event, come over." And they're like, "Okay, awesome, let's go." It's like we have to prove, you know, that we have the numbers, that like these students are talented, that we have all this stuff to really back it up. And that can mean multiple meetings, that can mean preparing presentations, it can mean a lot. So there's a lot of work that goes into that, which I'm very proud of that work that we have done over the years. So yeah, combine all the programs with the community and then the access to the employers and the opportunities, and this is essentially what our recipe has been for success, and it's what continues to put students in jobs through the organization.
You made a perfect segue. Like, now we just finished user discovery. Now you're like pitching to people, like to companies, not investors, but still, it's still sort of like that process of like convincing someone that what you have is real. I actually was gonna ask you, like that first time building Shell Hacks, what were some of the struggles you guys had earlier on, aside from like a lot of like pitch decks and meetings and stuff like that, when you were first?
Yeah, the Shell Hack story. So that's another chapter in our inner book. it was back in 2017, like you said, and it was actually Chris Rodriguez, who's one of our co-founders of Innit. He is the one who came up with the idea of like, hey, like what if we do like another hackathon here at FIU? At the time, there was already a hackathon that happened in the fall called Mango Hacks, and then we wanted to, I'm sorry, in the spring called Mango Hacks. And we wanted to create a new one called Shell Hacks in the fall semester, with the idea that we wanted to provide more opportunities for students to be able to participate in hackathons, right? And so Chris had been to other hackathons outside of, you know, the area as well, like Hack GT and whatnot, and Swamp Packs also at UF. And so he wanted to kind of bring that experience to the students at FIU. And yeah, so we went through many phases of coming up with ideas as to what we wanted this hackathon to look like. A funny story, when we started out, actually the reason why it was called Shell Hacks wasn't it wasn't because of like seashells, it was mostly because of turtle shells. And the reason for that was because initially we wanted to create a bit of a different kind of hackathon, which was going to be more of like a sustainability, environmental science type of hackathon. That was the spin we wanted to put on it, yeah, when we started out. But in terms of the challenges we faced, so you know, as we started to kind of shop around the idea to potential sponsors and whatnot, it became we noticed it was difficult. It was a difficult sell, especially for us just starting out our very first hackathon. Kind of putting us into that niche made it really difficult to be able to fundraise and get the support we needed. And so, you know, as we have done many times, we decided to pivot and then just do like a standard like hackathon and maybe offer like a track that's dedicated to like sustainability, instead of doing like just a sustainability only hackathon. And so that's what we decided to do, and that opened up a lot of doors for us at that point. And yeah, that was the first year we actually started to pitch to companies and actually like fundraise like real like big money. And so yeah, it was a lot of our own research. I mean, there were other hackathons like I mentioned, so we started looking up like what other hackathons were doing. We started looking up articles on how to like put together a sponsorship prospectus, how to like pitch to, you know, sponsors, how to work that whole thing out. And so we did some research, then we were able to create our own sponsorship packet, which I actually designed for many years. That was a really fun project that I did on the side. And so, you know, we did that, and you know, we started to reach out and then figure out, I guess, a strategy behind how are we gonna find these contacts, who are we gonna reach out to. So, you know, we have multiple ways that we do this strategically, and we were able to connect with many companies. And so I do recall selling some sending some cold emails, reaching out on LinkedIn and stuff like that. And I think the one company that really like turned things around for us were like this company came in and really like everybody else was just now paying attention, was Spotify. So we reached out to them, and they set up a meeting and everything. And then they got back to us after the pitch via email to tell us like, hey, we're super down to sponsor at your highest level. We're gonna be the co-host of the event with you. And so our minds were just like blown when that happened. I was just like, no way, like they are sponsoring us at the highest level for our first sponsor. Like, this is insane. And so that year it was Shell Hacks co-hosted by Spotify, which was like super cool to kind of have that. After that happened and we obviously blasted it everywhere, then other companies started to notice. And so then we got Amazon on board, we got Microsoft on board, we had GE, we had Akamai, we had Cisco, we had other companies also that joined us for the very first year. So that really like opened things up, and then we were able to finally now have funding to be able to run the hackathon and make it happen. And yeah, running the hackathon is a whole nother thing. It's a whole operation that takes many months of planning and organizing, but it is very rewarding to kind of see it happen, you know, in person that one weekend and see how much students enjoy it. But yeah, that's a little bit about like how that, I guess, origin of Shell Hacks sort of came to be and how we've you know, essentially been able to work with companies and bring that attention to FIU that we've been doing through Shell Hacks.
And so it was you and it was the other co-founder of Shell Hacks, and then
Chris, yeah.
who were other like key people who helped make this happen?
Yeah, it was definitely a team that we had. So one thing that I've really liked about, I guess, the chapter and how it operates is that we have operational roles within the, for example, in this case, the NNFIU chapter, and we also have program roles. And so the way we work is almost like a matrix organization where, we have all these programs as different verticals, but then all the operational roles support all the programs. So if we have a marketing person, they support marketing for Explore, they support marketing for Build, for ShellAx, for everything. And so the way we worked is that the eboard we had at the time, apart from doing the work that we did, year round with the workshops and the projects and mentorship, they also worked on ShellAx day in and day out. It's one of the things that we were doing. And so at the time, I believe, yeah, I was president at the time. Chris, who is a founder of ShellAx, he was my VP at the time. And he was both VP and ShellAx director. So he did two roles, which is insane. But Chris is amazing. So he did those two things. And then, yeah, the rest of the e-board also continued to help with finance and, marketing and sponsorships and all that stuff. So the other co-founders, also actually Sabina, Yasmin, Jose, they were also all involved during that time. And they all helped with ShellAx, kind of bring that to life. So we did that through the UPE years. And then essentially what happened is we kind of saw this opportunity to transition, which I know you mentioned earlier about like how this, how did UPE kind of turn into Innit and how did all that work out. And so, there were a few opportunities that came together around the same time that led us to make the transition. So one of those things was the Knight Foundation. So around, I think, 2022, if I'm not mistaken, the Knight Foundation had funded the School of Computing. So they put their name on it. And I believe they gave like 10 million to help hire more faculty and staff and help build a new building that's still being built right now. And so around that same time, the Knight Foundation reached out to us because they saw the great impact we were making at FIU and how we were helping thousands of students get jobs in tech through UPE. And they brought up the idea of scaling this model that we built at FIU and just bring it to other schools in the area and to help uplift even more students, right? So that opportunity came to us. Around that time too, another reason why we thought of transitioning and kind of, I guess, increasing our scope was because we had a lot of demand from students from other schools. So, over the past few years, and especially because of ShellAx, we were seeing an influx of students who were not from FIU coming in, not just for the hackathon, but sticking around post hackathon, wanting to be part of the workshops, wanting to be part of the build program projects, wanting to be part of the mentorship program. And so we kept hearing from students outside of FIU that they wanted to join the chapter because they didn't have something like that at their schools. So what we did in the meantime was, we allowed them to join the FIU chapter, but we felt that that wasn't really a sustainable way of serving students from other schools. Ideally, we would want to have a chapter at their school that would serve them in another way, right? And so that's the other part of it. And the last piece here was that, we essentially as an organization, like I said, we were really running like a startup and, moving very fast and wanting to do a lot of things. And so we were facing a lot of growing pain points, that a startup typically faces when they try to scale and to this magnitude. And so the scope of the chapter just is very large in terms of the number of programs we offer, the membership that we have, all the different connections and work that we do with partners. And so because we operate more like a startup, and because of the current bounds that we had as a student organization, we were not able to really fulfill our max potential here. And so, that wouldn't really allow us to scale. And also, like, we wouldn't be able to really bring the UPE name to other schools because we technically don't own that, right? It's not, these programs and things that we did at FIU, they were all built by the students, by us. They were not built from like a national entity that said, hey, here are the programs, go like do them. It was something that we came up with ourselves. And so, with all of these things happening at once, we decided then that it was the right time to, start our own nonprofit, which is Innit, and essentially control our own destiny, how we wanted to like move forward with the vision that we had for this. And yeah, so then we were able to receive a $500,000 investment from the Knight Foundation to start Innit, which was really exciting. That was one of the best days I've had. It was really, it really moved me a lot because I was like, man, like this is how far we've come. Like having a foundation really to recognize the work we've done all these years and give us this much money. And we all started just as a club, you know, that we just wanted to start because we wanted to kind of make friends and help each other out. So that was really, really awesome. But yeah, with that money, we were able to essentially hire an executive director to work on NN full time. Her name is Julie. She's amazing. She's part of our team. And we also established a national team, which includes me alongside other awesome alumni in the industry. You know, shout out to, you probably know a few of them, Yasmin, Jose, Sabina, Chris, Andy, Ivan. They're all really incredible people who are really passionate about the cause and are working on this day in and day out to help, you know, scale the operation and bring it to other schools. And yeah, we're now working alongside Julie to essentially expand the community and that model that we built at FIU and bring it to, you know, MBC, which we already have three chapters at. To UM, which is opening very soon, to UF, to UCF and other schools. And we also have a professional chapter also for alumni and professionals in tech who want to continue building community, but also want to give back to the students. And like you mentioned earlier, also there's the Miami chapter. So even with that, we're kind of expanding outside of just serving college students and not serving anybody in the community, like people who want to transition into a career in tech. Adventure Miami has given us a gift of 300K to essentially put behind that effort and kind of, you know, bring a second hire to the team and continue building on that. So yeah, it's just a lot of really great things happening, which we're really happy about.
I'm like noticing every single time you say like a startup-y word, I'm just like, this is not a student club. You obviously had that like innate sort of you sort of you're definitely a type of person who sort of has that drive within you to build something. Besides, you know, like helping people out, do you have like an inner why you made it happen? Like, because you weren't paid at the time. You were working like more than a full-time job.
Oh yeah, it was a full-time job. I mean, I am still not getting paid, and it's still almost a full-time job sometimes. So
That's
definitely
not
something that I'm doing on my own. Yeah, I mean, I coming into the school, like I said, I initially wanted to create a community for, you know, many students to kind of get together. And for me, I guess personally, I wanted to make friends coming into the school. I didn't really know anybody. So I found that as a way to be able to do that. Also, I had taken a bit of a break in between the time I was at MDC and then I went to FIU. So during that time, I had to support my family and I was mostly just working full time. So I didn't really get to like transfer right away from MDC to FIU. I think that was roughly maybe about 2 to 3 years that I did that. That made me feel a little bit like I was behind in a sense. And so what I wanted to do coming into FIU, I guess I just felt this like urge to really like, you know, take everything on and do as much as I can and really prove that I got what it takes. And so that is partly, I guess, what also drove me to really do quite a lot outside of the regular classroom work that I was doing. And I just wanted to be able to do that through an outlet that would allow me to, you know, do great work for the community. So this is where I essentially thought to myself, you know, let me build this beyond what a student organization could do. Because typically when, you know, in talks with many administrators or people from outside the school during the years that I was president, there was always like, oh yeah, you guys are a student club, like, you know, typical, like, you know, you guys are probably doing pizza parties and it's not really that serious. Like it's that kind of vibe. And even at the time, because we were called UPE, and because we had Greek letters as our logo, some people thought we were a frat. So even that also became a thing. They thought we were a frat, and so that was just a whole other thing. And so I really wanted people to take us more seriously and understand that we're not just a student club. Like we essentially could be a whole department with the school if we wanted to. Like we offer so much for the students that at this point we could be one. But that's kind of what, you know, that drove me to, you know, build that out, establish more of a reputation, I guess, for the work we were doing. And I think it wasn't so much about like just, you know, maybe talking about it all the time. It was more about letting our work do the talking. And I feel like that really showcased itself through Shell Hacks, through the weekly workshops that we host every single week, the projects that students work on, the stories that you hear here and there. The amount of activity and engagement you would see on campus, especially the engagement that I saw like pre-COVID, like it was a lot happening every Friday. You know, if it was a Friday, you knew UPE was having events or IN was having events, and there were things happening. And so people would come on Fridays, sometimes just for the events, to come in and learn from the workshops, socialize with students and whatnot. So it really became a whole whole experience for students that I think has been really valuable. And that, again, like I said earlier, we're now trying to scale and bring to other schools and help other students to also have that same experience that, we all had during this time at FIU.
What I'm hearing is that during that time where you were working, trying to provide for your family, and you really wanted a sense of community, and that sort of enabled you to be like, hey, this sucks, like job process sucks, and I want to help other people, but I also want to make friends along the way. I don't want it to just be like a little club that you throw pizza parties at, but really make community, connection. I wonder, within helping others, how did your family feel at the time when you were building and making this happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. My family was very skeptical at first. Well, when I first got involved as president and all, obviously they were happy for me and all because they had seen me, in other student clubs when I was in high school at MDC. So they already knew that I was an engaged student that would go to different clubs and try to learn different things, make connections, this and that. And so they saw that it was a valuable experience to have. But I think after that first year, when I really like went all in and started putting in hours and hours and hours of my time into the club, that's when they started to kind of like worry a little bit. They were like, "Oh, why are you spending so much time like in the club? Like you should be spending more time in like school with the classes, right? And getting A's." So thankfully, I was getting good grades. But I also had a lot of free time, I guess, outside of school, since I wasn't working when I was starting out at FIU, and so I decided to put all that into essentially building UPE and making it the best it could be. And so I remember, I would go to class and, I have class during the day, maybe like, I don't know, early in the afternoon, maybe 1 in the evening, like from 7 to 9 or something. But then I would be doing is I would be spending almost like every single day, Monday through Friday, from, I don't know, 9 a.m. all the way until maybe 1 a.m. sometimes at FIU and PT6, just either like working on UPE stuff, going to class, obviously, but outside of my free time, I would just spend it all like planning things out with the team, coming up with workshops, designing the flyers for things we had coming up, talking to sponsors. Like I did everything and anything in between to make the club the success that it was. And obviously, it wasn't all just me. It was with the amazing team that I had the honor to work with and that I still work with. They all really helped, shape me into the leader that I am today and allowed me to really understand multiple facets of what it is to run an organization. And without them, I would not be able to we wouldn't be able to have in it the way it is right now. And so, that was just a whole experience that I had. And obviously my parents were not like very happy at first because I was kind of like ghosting and I wasn't around. I wasn't at home too much. It was just like I came in at, 1 a.m., left the following morning, like at 8 a.m. to go to school, get there
And
by
you were
9.
thinking Miami, he was like clubbing. I'm like, no, he was
Yeah. Yeah, they were like just like, "What is this? Is this a hotel or something?" Like it was crazy. But what they slowly but surely kind of got to understand what I was doing, and part of it was because I also invited them at the end of every semester to the induction ceremonies that we had on campus for UPE. And so they would actually attend and they would help me bring the food and things like that. And they would see like the hundreds of students that would come to the induction ceremonies and go through the whole process and just see like the actual reality of what the community looked like that I was building. And so I think that really gave them a sense of pride when they saw that and they saw like why that was kind of my purpose. I think that kind of changed their minds through time and they were more supportive and helped me kind of, continue growing the organization and making it what it was. But yeah, it took a little while to kind of convince them and get them to really see like the value of doing this work and the impact. And, even thinking into my career also, like this whole experience, these years of building UPD and in it, like really made a huge impact in my the amount of knowledge and skills and experience that I've been able to now transfer into my actual day-to-day job, in the last 4-ish years that I've been in industry. So many things that I have learned during those years, I've been able to kind of take and now apply to my current jobs. And so I'm really grateful for having gone through that, whether it's being a student leader, getting my computer science degree, obviously, and learning all about like, programming, and even doing graphic design, back in the day, like I thought that maybe that was a waste of my time that I had done that, and I wish I had jumped straight into computer science. But thinking back at it, I feel like that has come in handy so many times, even now in industry too, as a product manager. Sometimes I'm, they're looking at the designs and working with UX designers to come up with the best user experience for the users that we work with. And that's where my graphic design skills come into play, or when I'm making branding and flyers for Innit, that comes into play. And so I think, all these things happen for a reason. And that's why I'm at where I'm at right now.
That's so true. It is like a lot that you've experienced a lot, and like your family had to support you through that. But like at first they were kind of confused. I'm like going through like a similar thing as well. Our families, they're immigrant parents that come from, these Hispanic countries. 'Cause like if you didn't know, Miami is like Latino America Central. So it's literally all mostly Hispanic. And like when you come here, like your parents are like, hey, go and live a better life. Like they want you to get a job. But then for certain types of people, they're like, I want to build something. And that's sort of like that entrepreneurial mindset of like, hey, I want to build something and I want to make an impact outside of getting a biweekly check, outside of, having a president's title in your college experience so you could get like a little scholarship. But like I would imagine that the impact that getting I'm hearing the whole experience of like getting user experience research, pitching to not investors but like companies, and then expanding and getting funding, not series funding but like funding for the nonprofit. And then now scaling it with strategic, team management and, delegating and making sure that, the students, they feel empowered that they can make an impact as well. I feel like that feels more, you'll feel more accomplished doing something like that than like getting a little scholarship because you were the president of a UP club. I would imagine so. Or not.
Yeah, I mean, no, yeah, definitely. I did get a scholarship also, which was nice,
It's a
but
bonus.
definitely the experience that I got out of it is just invaluable. It really shaped me as a person and who I am today. And that's what I tell people too, who sometimes ask like, oh, like should I get involved in the club XYZ? And you can get involved in any club, but I think what you make out of it is what's most important. So I think making sure that you're engaged, that you attend different workshops and events, and see what they have to offer also. See how engaged you can get, how much you can do with those communities to really help you succeed and get to the next step in your career. So I think it's just really what you make of it, to be honest.
Yeah, it really is. And it's really interesting because I don't think you would have been able to do what you've done if it wasn't for you being here in Miami. Because if you were in like, I don't know, Connecticut or like Ohio, I don't think it would have had the same, I don't know what it is, but I feel like Miami is like its own thing. It's very special. And I think that because, we're such a Hispanic, a very large, there's a very 70% actually, if you look at like data, there's 70% of people who live in Miami speak a second language besides English. The certain community that we have here is very like interconnected. Like everybody here knows each other, and there's no sort of like competition. There's more collaboration happening. So even though there's a lot of organizations doing similar things, like you always like collaborate with like different people. You guys have made a lot of impact in the Miami tech ecosystem. Could you tell me a little bit more about like what does it like what Miami means for you, and like sort of like what are your thoughts on like the Miami tech ecosystem now, especially after being so involved with it for like 10 years?
Yeah, it's a great question. My hope is that the Miami tech ecosystem continues to grow and flourish as it has the past couple of years, which has been, a crazy amount of growth and attention in the area. And honestly, I'm pretty confident that, in a few years we'll see a more kind of mature ecosystem, capable of supporting a lot of startups and companies. And I think, a big part of this will come from developing great talent in the city, and that's from multiple organizations that are working together to make this happen. Miami Tech Works is a big part of that right now. That's a big initiative within the city. In it is a core part of that as well. And I think the participation of all the universities and organizations, is something that will be really important and can really make this happen for Miami. I think there's a ton of opportunity, a lot of room for growth that you don't see in other major hubs like here in New York or in the Bay Area and Seattle. Those tech hubs are already very well developed. And I think that's one really cool thing about Miami is that there's so much room for growth there still to make an impact within the community. So, on the Innit side, our chapters have been doing an incredible job right now, like engaging with members and, bringing opportunities to students within different chapters. And to be honest, I couldn't be more proud of them. They're doing an amazing work. Shout out to David, Avi, Corey, Javier, Danai. They're all our chapter presidents, and they're just like really killing it and getting, students into great places and also interacting a lot with our alumni professionals in the tech industry. I think it's this collective effort that we're all doing, not just within Innit, but also within the other organizations that are really gonna put Miami more in the on the map and really attract, a lot of investment talent into the area. And I just think even within Miami inherently, like there are some of the most diverse, talented, and resilient people you can find in the city. I've met many of them, over the past 10 years and building UPE and Innit. And let me tell you, like they're going to shape the future of the tech industry. And I cannot wait to see the incredible things that, they're able to accomplish as they grow into their careers and they, make a huge impact within not just the city, but I think the US and across the world in their careers.
Innit Global, guys. You heard it here first.
Soon, soon.
We're not at that stage yet, we haven't IPO'd, but we're gonna get there eventually. Caesar, I think for anyone who isn't from Miami, like it's not just a beach cruise vacation city, but there really is an ecosystem growing here that's really going to become the next Silicon Valley. Not now, but surely in the next upcoming years, and a lot of people have been benefited from them. I think, like, I don't think I mentioned this earlier, but like a lot of the kids that I've met that have gone through like Innit, they all are in all of FAANG, including NVIDIA. I've met people who went to Blackstone,
I'm so proud
Netflix,
of them. Yeah, that's
Amazon,
awesome.
Apple, Microsoft. And I haven't met someone who has gotten into like any OpenAI yet, or any
It.
other people who have gone into like startups, but it's really cool. And I think what I want to ask you is something outside of career, more just like holistic wise. What advice would you give to someone who is just as driven, who wants to build something, but they feel as though like what advice would you give to someone who wants to build something, whether that's like a startup, a nonprofit, whatever project, and sort of like a mental model that sort of helped you along that way of, because not everyone just puts in from 8 a.m. to 1 a.m. hours. You have to have a sort of mindset for that. What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say don't be afraid, just jump in and do it, I think that's the one key thing that I think keeps a lot of people from sort of like experimenting and trying something new, especially when it comes to building, like in this case, potentially a startup or an organization. Like it can seem very daunting at first because of the maybe you have this really big vision for what you want to build and you're like, damn, like that's unattainable. Like I don't think I can get there. Like what I need to do so much. But you need to realize that this is an iterative process and then you can do it step by step. Like I said, we're in it. It's been 10 years that it took to get to this point. So it didn't happen from, one day to the next. So things take time. So I think, jumping in is the first thing to do, just not being afraid to do that and just pushing yourself to be able to kind of, explore and really learn, what it is that it means to build something, whatever it is that you're building, again, an organization or startup. Think about what kinds of problems you want to solve. Well, how do you want to potentially help people or solve a user problem that someone is having? So really understanding like what that what your market looks like, what the population that you're working with is like, and who are you trying to impact within that, right? What difference can you make in their lives? And so, you know, through my experience within it, that's kind of how that, you know, came to shape up with, you know, realizing that, hey, you know, I'm building this great community. There's all, you know, these awesome students who have a ton of potential. What are some of the pain points that they're having? And so understanding those very clearly and then creating solutions around those really allowed us to, you know, create that sort of affinity and engagement from the student population to then really be able to grow the community, offer the programs that we have, and ultimately help them get a job in tech, right? So definitely, you know, not being afraid to do that, learning, you know, along the process, asking questions. This is even like, you know, advice that I give people who are, you know, about to intern also. I tell them, hey, when you join, like, don't be afraid to ask questions. You're not supposed to know everything already. Like, you're here to learn. And just go through that process step by step. You know, you're gonna make mistakes, it's gonna happen. And myself, it's one of those things that I always am afraid of the most because I'm a perfectionist and I love doing things a certain way. It took me a long time to kind of like, you know, break away a bit from that, and just learn, like, you know, to continue just progressing and kind of building things and without them having to be, you know, super perfect or whatever. But just getting something out there that's valuable for who you're solving this problem for and helping you know, build something meaningful that people are actually going to be able to either use or be part of, or that's going to make an impact in their lives. I think that's something that it's really, really important.
Social innovation right there is really important.
As you start building this, kind of think about what's going to be your productivity stack of, you know, how am I going to collect information? How am I going to share information? How am I going to like form a community? So there's so many different things to put together into like a productivity stack that can be really useful as you start, you know, your journey into building something.
That's great. Thank you so much, Caesar. I'm now gonna give you the chance to like promote anything and how people can reach you. I know Miami Hack Week demo day is today, which is pretty nice. I forgot to mention this earlier, but I'll let it in. I met Caesar at like when I first came into FIU. I wanted to like do something, and like some girl in my math class told me about UPE. And then when I joined UPE before I was in it, they had Miami Hack Week, which is like a couple of days you're just like coding. And I'm just like, okay, I wanna learn. I just transferred from MDC, so I wanted to learn more about the FIU community. And that's where I met Caesar. And that's how like all of with if it wasn't for Miami Hack Week, I wouldn't have met another girl who told me about another program. And then that program has helped me. So it was really like a Kickstarter into a lot of the things that have helped me in my tech career. So this is very much full circle. We're
That's
back
awesome.
10 years. Not 10 years for me, but 10 years for in 10 years.
Yeah, a few years for you, but I think since we have met, like, Coral, you've done an amazing job, and I see you like on LinkedIn all the time, all the things you're accomplishing, your scholarships, the conferences you're going to, your podcast. Like, it's been I have seen you've grown so much during this period of time that I'm just so proud, and I can't wait to see all the amazing things you'll continue to do as you know, graduate FIU, go to a career, and continue the podcast. So I'm really excited for what's to come up for you. Yeah, so as you probably, you know, heard from this entire episode, I am part of Init, a nonprofit that essentially helps empower underserved communities to launch careers in tech. And so we offer chapters at different universities, and we're growing, you know, by the month. We have chapters at FIU and NDC, UM coming up soon, and different other, you know, schools in the area. So if your school doesn't have an Init chapter and you're interested in opening one, please reach out to us. We're more than happy to talk to you. You can do so by going to our website at weareinit.org. You can also reach out to me on LinkedIn. Feel free to look me up. I'm more than happy to respond. And then we can chat from there. And then we can help you bring in an Init chapter to your school and kick off all the awesome programs that we have, that we've been offering through the chapters that we already have. So that's a really exciting opportunity there. And yeah, as you mentioned, Miami Hack Week today is a demo day for the entire hackathon. So that's something that, you know, we've also been doing this past week and a half in partnership with Miami Hack Week. We essentially designed this ex student experience for students in the area to be able to take part in the hackathon and work alongside some engineers and founders who are, you know, participating this week, and also be able to build, you know, great projects and showcase it to the community. So it's been a really exciting opportunity, and I can't wait to see all the amazing projects that they put out.
Well, Caesar, thanks again for coming onto the podcast. Thank you for listening to the Forward Thinker Show. You can listen to us on app wherever you listen to your podcast, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts. Subscribe to our YouTube channel if you want to view the video version, and also follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at Forward Thinker Show. Thanks again, Caesar. Bye.
No problem. Thank you all. Bye.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Forward Thinker Show.